across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Well, good morning and welcome back at 7:06. Nice to have you here up north on this Thursday morning, May 2nd, 2024. Coming up this hour, we'll have our weekly Top Chef Wisconsin recap with Luke Mathers as the chef testants
compete. You're evil.
At American Family Field. And we highlight a Northeast Wisconsin leader and candidate in this week's Women Win Wisconsin segment, powered by Motherhood for Good. As always, you can reach us by phone or by text, 855-75-CIVIC. 855-75-CIVIC. Send us a text message that way, or call us, or use the Civic Media app as well. 7 o'clock temperatures around Wisconsin look like this. 51 here on Lake Wissota, 46 in Hayward. Park Falls at 45, Wausau 50. Green Bay 52, La Crosse 53. Wisconsin Rapids 52, Oshkosh 53. Madison is 56 degrees, and where Greg is in Waukesha, 52 degrees right now. From Rob out in Tigerton, he says, good morning. It's 57 degrees. What a beautiful sunrise this morning, and saw a rainbow. As we mentioned in the last segment about Foreigner 4, he says he had that album when he was in junior high. He remembers working on farms around the area, baling hay and picking stones to get that album and other extra things when I was a kid, which takes me to now to the question to Greg Bach, yeah. Whether he's familiar with picking rock as farm kids all over know about.
I'm not a farm kid. I grew up in the deep, dark hills of suburban Waukesha.
So picking rock was not a thing, right?
I did move boulders as a kid.
Okay. Well, yeah. For landscaping purposes.
Yep.
Picking rock again, me, city boy, you know, who married into a dairy farm family from Manitowoc, learned early on about picking rock and used it as a parenting technique for our daughters as well, because, you know, despite the best, you know, tractors in the world and everything else, there is no substitute for just getting out there in the field, walking through it, and getting any larger rocks out of the way that might get in the way of planting, harvesting, whatever the case may be. And it's no fun. Your back really hurts when it's done, but it's there. And I found that it was very useful once our daughters experienced it, like the one time, that we could always tell them when they were naughty, like, you know, Sherry's brother's name is Bill, so Uncle Bill. We said, you know, we can always send you to Camp Uncle Bill, and you can pick rock for a weekend. And that worked. That worked every time.
Dad, I'd rather get a switch.
Right. Tomorrow's show, we'll have Jim Santel, Dan Schumacher, and Mark Jacob. And speaking of Mr. Schumacher, some good news for him coming out of the Ashland area, as we learned late yesterday, that Northland College will remain open. This is the version out of the Ashland Daily Press, which says the college will remain open with a refocused model. According to a news release from the college, the model draws on proposals and ideas shared with the board over the past several days. It includes adjusting the number of majors offered, restructuring the organization, and securing necessary funding to address the short-term deficit and the long-term sustainability needs of the college. And then here's the part that affects our friend Dan. It also includes a continuation of Northland's current intercollegiate athletic programs. And again, before I got to know Dan, you know, for me, I was like, well, what, you know, do you need sports? Is it an extra expense? This was something that was definitely debated at Northland and has been in other places. But as Dan has explained during his Friday segment with us many times, that's also a key to enrollment, is that, you know, a lot of people who want to participate in sports can go to, you know, say a school of business almost any place. So if you've got a good sports and intramural program, maybe that's where they want to go to be a student athlete and then eventually go into, you know, the career that they've chosen as their major. And if you've attracted that many extra students because they have the opportunity to take part in athletics, well, that's that many more who will graduate and that many more who will become donors in the future. And again, it was something I did not, I don't know that I would have necessarily agreed with it until I had more conversations with Dan about it. And he's talked on this program about how many more students came to UW-Eau Claire during those years when he was athletic director. So for Northland College to stay open and viable, it's going to need to, you know, not see a downturn in enrollment after this particular financial scare. And we mentioned earlier in the week, Alverno College is facing, I think it was a $9 million deficit, and certainly UW campuses, small and large, are facing issues. So this was not unique to Northland College, but the news here is that, you know, for a good couple of weeks, it looked like it was going to be shutting down, but instead seems to have found a path forward to take care of its deficits while staying in business and maybe being able to build up its long-term endowment. But again, the challenges will be there. We've talked about the demographic challenges as well as the fiscal challenges, but I'm sure we'll if we can get Dan on tomorrow, we'll have much more to say about that. The daily newsletter from Up North News comes out about, you know, 5 a.m. every morning. It's put together by Christina Laurie. And in today's edition, there is a link to my story on our website about the policy differences between Tammy Baldwin and Eric Hovde. And I think tomorrow, if not today, I'm going to get into some comments we found that Eric Hovde made about minimum wage and minimum wage workers. So we'll share that a little later. But in terms of policy differences, you'll find a link to that article in our newsletter. Also, Christina has an article about Lyme disease. We're moving into spring and into tick season, and the number of Lyme disease cases has more than doubled over the past 15 years. So she has a story in there about what you should do if you discover a bite, what is the best way to check your pet for ticks. Lyme disease is nothing to mess with. And I know we've had a big thing about COVID and the pandemic. And again, people not really appreciating at first how bad it was until they caught it. And the same goes for Lyme disease. I think I would hazard a guess that many, if not most of us in Wisconsin, know somebody who has had it at some point, and they will tell you for such a teeny tiny tick, it causes great big problems and is nothing to mess with. So learn more about that in our newsletter. You can head over to upnorthnewswi.com and click newsletter in the top banner. All right, we were talking in our last hour about the visit by former President Donald Trump to Waukesha. We played several cuts in our last hour, and if you missed it, just go to civicmedia.us and you can listen back to every hour of this show and every show. But I saved one clip here because there's something that is not about policy. Okay, it's not about Donald Trump's differences to Joe Biden. It's not about Democrat and Republican because he's going to be commenting on a fellow Republican here. It just has to do with the privilege that Donald Trump feels is uniquely his, that none of the rules apply to him. You're going to hear that in this snippet about one of his former rivals and the language that he uses, that is, it is the adult equivalent of the two kids in the back seat where the one's like, I'm not touching you, I'm not touching you, I'm not touching. So it's like, I can't say these words, and yet listen to him say the words, talking about former New Jersey governor and fellow Republican, Chris Christie.
Remember Chris Christie? He really liked me quite a bit, right? That's only because I was wise to him. And somebody screamed out, he's a fat pig. And I said, sir, and you know you're not allowed to use the fat word. If you use the fat word, you're essentially out of politics, right? There are certain words you can't, you can say obese, but you can't say fat. I think obese is probably worse. But you can't use the fat. But a person shouted out, he's a fat pig, sir. And I said, sir, never, ever call Chris Christie a fat pig, ever. He is not a fat pig. Please, I'll have to ask you to leave the room. So anyway, it's called having a little fun on the campaign trail in Wisconsin, right?
No, it's not. No, it's not.
That is the perfect example of a stand-up comic who stands on stage and says, stupid things. I'm not even say offensive because people are like, oh, you get offended.
Yeah.
Just stupid things. And you hear the rumbling of laughter from people who are essentially bullies. He's the big bully. They're the little bullies. He's making the joke in the way he knows it'll land. And they're like, they don't care about the joke. They love the reaction. And I just, he might as well just said, they're just jokes, people. Can't you just laugh?
Oh, no, he had to show that, you know, the rules don't apply to him. Oh, and you know, things that he would never say. And he always talks about how people come up and say to him, sir, this and sir, that. And here he's saying that he told this person, sir. Donald Trump has never called anybody sir.
No.
In his life. You know, he was looking for a vehicle to, again, insult. And he did plenty of insulting, you know, Joe Biden, Hillary Clinton. I'm sure little Marco, you know, Rubio came up at some point. And this is what he does. And he did it again in Wisconsin yesterday to the guffaws that always remind me of the laughs from Beavis and Butthead. And I would just, I play that not for anybody's entertainment,
no,
but to remind you to take a measure of the man as he is.
Yeah.
And as he puts it on display. Meanwhile, somebody who does want to be Trump's running mate, South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem, tried to do some damage control on Sean Hannity last night.
I never did it. Here's the dog.
Yeah, what if it were that easy? Like, yeah. Oh, I didn't kill the, you mean this puppy right here that I didn't drag down to the gravel pit and shoot it in the head?
God.
So she was making the case it was not a puppy. Well, it's 14 months old. You know, you can say what you want, but don't get into semantics with, you know, what you killed there, and that, you know, that it was a killer, that it had slaughtered, you know, these chickens and it attacked somebody. Yeah, I get that. The options are out there. Certainly putting an animal down is not unheard of.
Yeah.
It's the way in which she told it, the way in which she did it in the laziest fashion possible, that I think even with that appearance on Sean Hannity, she did not help her cause one bit. I do not see Trump taking her on the ticket at this point, even if there was a chance to begin with.
And as also the fact that she was just, like, when she came out, she was just like, I did it. Deal with it. I don't care. You can't walk that back.
She wants to be such a tough guy,
and
it's not working. All right, more coming up in just a bit. Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. This is Up North News Radio, live from Chippewa Falls on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Today, you can catch our history lesson every morning at about 6:50. Willie Adames homered twice. Colin Ray pitched six scoreless innings to lead the Brewers over the Tampa Bay Rays 7-1 yesterday afternoon in the finale of a three-game series. You'll recall there was a bench-clearing fight the night before. And so now, as a result, Brewers reliever Abner Uribe was suspended for six games, Freddie Peralta for five, manager Pat Murphy for two, Rays outfielder Jose Siri for three games. Uribe was also sent down to AAA Nashville. The Brewers are off today. They start a three-game series at Wrigley Field tomorrow. Day games Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, the first series since Craig Counsell left to go manage the Cubs. Joe Ross will be pitching tomorrow. You can catch those games starting at 12:45 Friday, Saturday, and Sunday on WRCE Richland Center, WRJN in Racine, Kenosha, Oshkosh Air Support, and 98Q Country in Park Falls. We'll tell you about the Bucks in just a sec. Carmella's on the line and wants to comment a bit on the former president's visit to Waukesha yesterday. Carmella, good morning.
Hi, good morning, Pat. Well, every time I hear with the rally and the things that he says, and it always brings me back to when I first started noticing Trump. I mean, I'm not from New York, so I didn't know who he was. I would see him occasionally on Regis Philbin's show, and then he would make appearances, and then he's on The Apprentice, and I'd just be baffled. Like, he tries to come across that he's so smart and he's such a businessman, and I would just laugh. But once he got onto the political scene, and again, talking to people, I don't argue politics with people, but I would just say, this man, he's a boss, he's a father, he's, you know, an uncle, he's whatever. Is that who you want, you know, representing you? And, I mean, just on a human being basic level, why? Why would you do this? And it's just when I hear them laughing at him inferring that somebody else was calling Christie fat, it makes my stomach turn every single time. And I just don't know how to address it with other people. I just shake my head and will not respond about Trump.
You know, Carmela, where maybe the situation, maybe there's a parallel. Have you ever been with some friends or acquaintances, and one of them tells a joke that, let's say it's a little off color or a little bit mean, and at first there's kind of a nervous laugh, but they realize that you're looking at them and not really laughing, like, no, that was not really kind of a cool thing to say. I kind of feel like that's why we're playing these. It's like, I want you to hear this at first, and yeah, like the people in the crowd, some of them, you know, guffawed, but I'd like to think that a few more of them, more each time, go, eh, that's not really funny, he's not really a nice person. So I hope we feel like that word is getting around, but Carmela, I know you sound as surprised as I am that it hasn't sunk in faster with some people.
Oh, for years, like, I'm the one, like, kind of looking side by side, like, really? That's what you want? And I don't like talking politics with people that I know, specifically that I know are, you know, on the opposing side. And I might say, well, why? And I might bring up policy, and I'm always trying to be polite about it without having a full argument. But then I always go back to the human being part of it. And it just, and I will strongly advocate or oppose, I should say, against Trump on that level.
I think that's the perfect place to go. There's a place for policy discussions, but there's also a place for personal discussions. This is very much in keeping with the article that I read on air a couple of weeks back from John Torinos. Said 10 questions to ask every Trump supporter, and they basically were what you said. Would you trust this person, you know, to watch your children? Would you want this person as a boss? You know, would you want to sit next to this person in church? And clearly, we know what the answers are to all of those. And so I'm glad to hear that this is resonating, and that you and many other people say we don't have to talk about the politics. Just look at the man and see if that's what you like. So, Carmela, thank you for making those points. I appreciate you calling in.
All right. Thank you. Have a great
All right.
day.
Have a great day. Yeah, you as well. It really is, you know, the case of you can talk to people on different levels. There are plenty of people, Republican, conservative, that we don't really talk about the policy so much. You know, we do a little bit so we know where we stand on these things. But it is on the personal where a lot of them part ways. Remember, Donald Trump did not win the Wisconsin primary in 2016. Ted Cruz did, which that's its own commentary. But it was a whole lot of people saying, no, this is not the guy that I want. And let's make this part clear, because I've said this plenty of times. A guy like Donald Trump, I understood the potential appeal in 2016. Of a guy who says he's been successful in business, who said he could self-fund, who puts forward a confident and strong demeanor. But then he got in, and you realized he is a jerk. You realize he doesn't actually have any plans. The only thing he got done in his first term was blowing a $2 trillion hole in the deficit for tax cuts that for a short time benefited the middle class, but for a long time benefited the upper class. Those tax breaks, by the way, are going to expire next year. Those parts, Trump has said, if I get back in, I'm going to extend those millionaire, billionaire tax cuts. So people realized he's not a nice person. He is not a man of action. He is not looking out for America and its allies around the world. And so they've all had their reasons to sour on Donald Trump. Others have not yet, and they're loud, and they make a good showing in polling. But I really do think polling is broken at this point in the country. And I know pollsters. I know some of them want to work really hard and get these things right. But I just think polling is broken in this day and age where we're not answering landlines, you know, the way that we used to. So we air the clips and urge you to, you know, do with them what you will that helps you, you know, have good conversations with people and maybe end up taking a friend or two to the polls with you when you vote come November. All right, I mentioned the Bucks and the playoffs, and this might be it tonight. 5 o'clock, game 6. Indiana leads 3-2. Pre-game's at 5 o'clock on Civic Media stations that include locally grown radio in Wisconsin Rapids, Lake Air and Amory, 98Q Country in Park Falls, News from the Center in Richland Center, WRJN in Racine, Kenosha, and Oshkosh Air Support. And if they can pull off a win and force a decisive game 7 in Milwaukee, we'll have the details tomorrow as to, you know, when that will be, what times, what stations, and things like that. Let's see, from folks up in Hayward on the text line, the best thing of the first Trump term was how ineffective he was at implementing his policy. I'm worried that won't be the case in a second term. And that gets back to the Time Magazine article, which, again, I recommend it very strongly. You are not likely to enjoy it, but you should read it because, unlike that first term with all the guardrails, you know, the people that he had around them, and he was new at it, none of that would be the case in a second term. So the things that were avoided in the first term, they would come back if he gets elected. Women Win Wisconsin, powered by Motherhood for Good, is coming up next. You're up north. Won't you tell me if I'm coming on too strong? This heart of mine has been hurt. Girls, we run this mother. Girls, we'll run the world. 7:34 now on Up North News Radio. And if you're hearing Beyonce, you know it's time for our weekly edition of Women Win Wisconsin. With our friends from Motherhood for Good, including Nicole Slavin and Kate Duffy, and Kate's tiny human friend, who you might hear in the background, depending on how things go. Kate, how are you? How's the tiny human?
I'm good. She's good. We're hanging in there. We're doing pretty well. Trying to keep her asleep for this recording. So we'll see.
All right. We'll give it our best to be a calming influence. Nicole, you're doing well?
Doing great. Yeah. You know, lots going on, busy stuff, but always a joy to be able to come here and talk with awesome candidates. So excited. Yeah.
So as we continue meeting various women who are community leaders and or candidates around the state, we get to return to our friend Alicia Saunders, who we've talked to in the past, is now a candidate for assembly in the 2nd Assembly District. Alicia Saunders, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
I'm fine. You know, you're not at the phase yet where you're knocking on 100 doors a day, I'm guessing. You don't look that tired.
Not just yet. Mm-hmm. Oh, no. We'll get there.
It'll get there really soon. But you've got events and meeting folks, and we'll talk more about that in just a bit. But let me kick things off, and then Nicole and Kate will join in with the questioning as well. Just to start with the 2nd Assembly District, what areas are we talking about? We know that we've talked with Kristen Lyerly and you in the past, talking about Northeast Wisconsin and the congressional districts, but tell us about the 2nd Assembly District.
Well, the 2nd Assembly District now comes out to Kimberly, which is how I got added in with the new maps. So it borders on 441 in Kimberly, and then goes down to the Calumet-Outagamie border on CE, and then it goes all the way up to Ledgeview. It no longer has De Pere, and then all the way out west to Two Creeks and down to Reidsville. So now it includes like Michicot, Maribel, all those fun areas in there.
Wait. Did you say Reidsville?
Yes, Reidsville.
Where my wife graduated, so we could move back there and vote for you if we moved in with my in-laws.
Sure.
Okay. Well, let me check on that first. I don't know. She might not be up for that.
Pat,
idea.
Just make sure to update your registration if you're doing any moving now.
Thank you. See, always yes. A good public service here. All right. And Alicia's there. What does the field look like? Are there other candidates running that are announced in there yet? What's the situation there?
Right now, it looks like only the incumbent, which is Representative Shea Sortwell. Mm-hmm. And as of now, it's just me, it looks like, for the Democratic side.
All right. Well, tell folks why you decided to take on an incumbent Republican in this newly drawn district. What brought you to the race?
Well, I just believe that we needed somebody in our government that believes that the government is supposed to work for the people. And I honestly believe that the government is supposed to work for the people. And then I believe that we needed a change because our state government has not been going in the right direction, as I've seen a lot of people have said.
Yeah, I'm sure you're with many of us who, you know, watch what's going on in Madison, or what's not going on in Madison, how often, you know, we are supposed to elect these people. But as we know, in a nearly 50-50 state recently, more than a decade, we've had a almost super majority of Republicans. And just like you said, if the government is supposed to work for the people, that hasn't really been the case. Okay, so in this area, I'm from the Milwaukee area. I know Nicole is from up there as well. Every election, I'm always so intrigued by this area up there because I think it used to be more red, but we've seen it go more blue and more blue and more blue. And I think with everything going on, there's these great opportunities for really quality Democratic candidates to come in and take some of these seats from Republicans, especially with these new maps. What do you think is like really special and unique about the area that you would be running to represent? And why do you have hope that they're ready for a change and could come out and vote to flip that seat?
Well, I know more about the heart of the Valley area where I live in Kimberly. But it's just like a lot of it is people are tired of seeing politicians talking garbage to each other, to constituents. They want their government to work for them and actually take care of them. I mean, they're tired of their fire departments not being funded. They're tired of our schools being underfunded, you know, and then you've got the whole issue with reproductive rights. That's really gotten everybody going and motivated to get things to change.
Yeah, I completely agree, Alicia. And I'll tell you, when the maps changed, I was in District 2. I'm in De Pere. Had the, I guess, what shall we say? The unforgettable Shea Sortwell as my representative for quite a while. And I think kind of building off of what Kate had said, it is just different up here. What I'll say is it's very community oriented. And something I very much felt with Sortwell is that he represented the people, a small group of people who aligned with him, did not look out for the greater good or work across the aisle or do any of that kind of work. And so more of that is definitely not something that, you know, I would support. Could you tell us a little bit about ways, I know that you have a very expansive military background, ways that you're able to connect with the community that perhaps Shay is unable to?
Well, I mean, I personally, I'm blue collar. I'm a single mom. I am a Navy veteran. I'm one of those people that's worked paycheck to paycheck. I understand the struggle. I've been on, Badger Care, food stamps, and I understand the struggle versus just sitting up in that ivory tower, so to speak, of sitting on one side or sitting on the other and going after what the party wants versus what the people need.
So when we talk about, you know, everything from working families to to veterans and all of that. You used benefits from the GI Bill after your military service to further your education. A classic example of government investment in people to help them have a better life. And yet we hear so often from folks on the other side of the aisle, depending on how they want to pick and choose things, something like, say, expanding Medicaid for postpartum care for new moms, Speaker Robin Voss calls that a handout. He calls Medicaid welfare. What are they missing that you get and that the working families in your district are going to understand as you talk to them?
Well, I think, honestly, we need to stop calling it a handout because it really isn't, because we're all paying taxes into it. So as long as we're paying taxes, it's not really a handout. It's something that we've earned, and our money is going to something that we all need. We all need healthcare. So honestly, it's a misrepresentation of what Medicare and Medicaid really are. They're not handouts. I mean, you here in the state of Wisconsin, you do have to have a job to try and get some assistance, or you have to be actively looking for a job or not be able to work.
Yeah, I think that's something that's really important. I'm glad you touched on the distinction there and the handout versus, I think we need to change the messaging in general, that it's an investment. And the more we invest in some of these government programs, the better the quicker we're going to get people on their feet, back in the workforce, contributing to our economy. What's that saying? Like, the rising tide lifts all boats, right? And that's what I love about Democrats and a lot of the policies that Democrats support, including kind of expanding healthcare. And I mean, I think we are only one of four states that has not expanded postpartum Medicare coverage for new moms, which is just crazy, right?
It's more than crazy, Kate, because it passed the Senate 32-1, if I remember correctly, and it would pass the Assembly on a massive bipartisan vote. But one person, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, who keeps referring to Medicaid and BadgerCare as welfare, as a handout, kept the bill from even coming up. That's the amazing disconnect here, Kate. When you and everybody else in Motherhood for Good talks about this, it's amazing how this one man, thrice married and in power longer than any other speaker, has this kind of a negative impact on the lives of single moms and the other moms in your district, Alicia. And I feel like that's going to be a big part of what you're doing over the next several months here is kind of filling in the blanks for people. Like, you know, this could be happening if it weren't for, you know, Speaker Voss, Representative Shortwell, and the others who are, sounds like they're just true obstacles to a better life there in Northeast Wisconsin.
Oh, definitely. I mean, as a single mom, I've sat here and I've worked through the struggles, working full time and trying to make it to kids' events, trying to make sure that my kids have opportunities and are able to fulfill their dreams. I mean, right now my oldest is in college, literally struggling to be able to fulfill their dreams. And my son will be going to college in the fall. And it's rough. And I think people understand it and they're just very tired.
That is a very good point. And as a mother with two kids in college as well, I completely understand. I think something that really, talking about Robin Voss and how many terms he served and just the movement that we have here, I think reproductive rights really, really brings women in particular to the table, hopefully to the ballot box as well. Could you talk a little bit about your views on Wisconsin and our current abortion ban and reproductive rights and where you stand on that?
I think that the government needs to stay out of the exam room, number one. Number two, I honestly think that we need to enshrine abortion rights, reproductive rights in our state constitution. That needs to be a guaranteed right because it's healthcare. Healthcare is a human right. And we need to be able our doctors need to be able to help us make these decisions and perform these procedures without fear of going to prison.
Are there any other major policy priorities that are important to you based on your experience or the area that you wanted to talk about that you're going to be fighting for?
I'm very passionate about our emergency responders. I've been talking to some of the fire departments within the district, and like there are things that I didn't know were going on within the district, within the state for emergency responders. And it just, it made me so angry. Like in our state, we've got fire departments that are struggling to get firefighters. We've got fire departments that don't even have the ability to hire full-time firefighters. I had one fire chief tell me that we needed to get a statute to define minimum requirements, like 24-hour coverage. We've got some communities that do not have day coverage at all. There's communities that there is no firefighters or fire department available during working hours.
And by the way, there are communities as well that have had to go to referendum. Everybody thinks of referendums as a school thing, but local governments have had to go to referendum to say, we need your permission to raise your own taxes so that some of these emergency services can still go on. So we didn't even have to talk about school referendums today, just based on your own priorities. We can see the need for people that are going to give us a state where we don't have this constant need for referendums, because we'll have legislators who are actually living up to their obligations. Alicia Saunders is doing that in the 2nd Assembly District. We have put up on screen the places where you can find her on Facebook, on X, on Instagram, on TikTok, and of course her website. And Alicia, it's been great to visit with you again. Thank you so much. Take care out there. We'll visit again soon.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Hey, Kate, good job over there. I see somebody squirming, but totally respected the process.
Perfect timing.
That's so great. Nicole, thank you so much as well. Again, everything's at Motherhood for Good on Instagram, right?
You got it. Yep. Come find us at Motherhood for Good on Instagram.
All right. Thanks so much, ladies. I appreciate it. Coming up next, Luke Mathers and a little recap of Top Chef. You're up north. All right, time for our dose of the only reality TV we talk about on this program, and it's only because Top Chef is in Wisconsin for this particular season. They started with 15 chef testants.
16,
and now it's down to 10, and here's Luke Mathers, who is predicting the Bucks are still going to win the series in 7 games. Mr. Mathers, how are you?
I'm doing well, Pat. How about yourself? I'm hopeful. I'm not predicting anything. I'm just hopeful. Bucks and 7.
Okay. We got Calvin here working at Civic Media at WAUK. He went to game 5 and they creamed the Pacers. So we're putting all our money on Calvin, not so much the Bucks.
Okay. However it gets done is totally fine here. All right. So we've got the down to 10, and they knew that their next elimination challenge was somehow going to involve America's pastime. They talked about baseball and where they would go eventually. But before they could get to American Family Field, there was going to be, you know, this, what do they call it? The quick fire challenge. The first thing that they do to make up a dish. And so they were joined by Brian Voltaggio, I believe the name is.
Yeah, Voltaggio. He's one of the two Voltaggio brothers.
He is a 3-time winner of Top Chef competitions. And again, having not watched before, I don't know. I just thought it was Ken Jennings from Jeopardy. He looks like they could be, you know, brothers or something. He comes in,
I don't know
very
about
friendly.
That. I don't see that. But Brian, fun fact, never been eliminated. He's been in on 3 different seasons of Top Chef. He's made it to the finals every single time. He just hasn't become Top Chef because he lost in the finals. So he's never heard the phrase, pack your knives and go. Because at the end of the season, it's always the contestant gets named and then they are Top Chef. And so Brian Voltaggio has been on 3 different seasons and got to be the guest host this past episode last night. But he's never been eliminated in three seasons of Top Chef. It's pretty incredible.
So I guess he knows his stuff. So for their challenge this time around, in the first round, it involved everybody's favorite word in the kitchen, flambé, which is usually what we say if we're covering up a mistake, where we set something on fire in the kitchen. But in this case, you're supposed to do it intentionally. You're supposed to use flame to create a dish, and they only get 20 minutes and go. Now, at this point, they say you got 20 minutes and go. I won't be able to because I will have wet my pants and I have to go change those first. Because I'm like, the pressure in 20 minutes to figure out what you want to make, grab the ingredients, whip something together, set it on fire in the proper proportion is, again, just I cannot get over how talented these folks are. And by the way, the big thing about this episode compared to the first six, and you heard it from the judges repeatedly, they were so disappointed in these contestants the first six go-rounds. Like, oh, you guys can do better. You can do better. They all had really good dishes this time around.
Yeah. There was no bottom. They didn't even talk about that for this quickfire. Mm-hmm. Dan Jacobs, hometown chef from Milwaukee, he even kind of teased. He's like, I don't like these quickfires. He's very similar, the same vein as you, Pat, where he's like, I don't like the intensity. I don't like how quick. And then they announced this quickfire had a $10,000 cash prize. And after saying that he was, you know, maybe going to sit out the flambé challenge, Dan Jacobs was like, never mind. I think I'll participate in this one.
Everybody's got their price. And it was 10K, which they later revealed was going to become 20K. Yes. And so you had flambé dishes that included shrimp with a hint of orange. There were these caramelized bananas. There was one made with mushrooms and bacon, one with sea bass, one with a kimchi and scallion donut. Again, words I never thought would come together, but they all did it, and then moved on to the main event, which was at American Family Field, that started with the racing sausages, who are, of course, are legendary,
and world then, famous.
Oh yes, they learned that their guest judges would include Ryan Braun and Brittany Snow, actress from Pitch Perfect, which I'm not, do they just grab randos like that? Or does Brittany have a connection to Milwaukee or something? Or?
Sometimes they just find people to tie in. That's
they just,
all.
They just get, okay. Yep. So they explain the five sausages that race, which is the, let's do it from memory, the hot dog, the chorizo, the Italian, the Polish, and the brat.
Yep.
And
never bet on the chorizo.
Not in that order, but yes.
Hat is top heavy. Hat is top heavy. Hard to run.
And so they learn that they are going to split up into teams, five and five, and each one is responsible for making one dish with one of the types of sausage. So in each of the two groups, it's a head-to-head on the bratwurst, a head-to-head on the hot dog, a head-to-head on the Italian. And so they go get their ingredients, and they've got so much time to put it together in the American Family Field catering kitchen. And out they go with again, I would not expect to have a Polish sausage with etouffee, you know, or a pierogi, or
Polish sausage. That was a pretty slam dunk combination right off the bat.
A corn dog with wasabi, Italian sausage served with risotto, and by the way, foreshadowing.
I eat that. Foreshadowing
when he said he was going to do it with risotto. It's like they made it clear to have so many people like raise their eyebrows and go, really? You're going to try risotto? Because apparently...
Historically bad dish decision on Top Chef. Anybody that decides to make a risotto usually has either hard time with it and barely skates by or gets sent home and packing their knives.
More like a risotto. I got him. Yeah.
There he is. Greg's participating.
Welcome back, buddy.
God, this
all right, hurts. So you got these five head-to-heads, which they set it up like a scoreboard, so five innings. But, you know, basically it's a best three out of five. Mm-hmm. And so they all work on their dishes. Everybody samples them. You know, Ryan Braun gives a couple of good comments on there. And in Dan's head-to-head, which was in the fifth inning.
Yep.
And he had the bratwurst. Here's the Milwaukee guy with the bratwurst. And it was pretty clear to me, and I think to a few of the other people there, that his was the weakest of the dishes. And yet he's not the one who went home. I really thought he was because, much like the quickfire, I'd never met Dan. I'm sure he's great, but he's also, you know, you've been competing like this. he looked like he was just, like you said at the beginning, kind of sitting this one out. And I thought he was going home.
And he admitted that he was struggling with this, how to tie it in to the competition. He's worked with Bratz before. He's familiar. He was kicking himself towards the end when he found out that, yes, he was in the bottom. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, when you make a risotto on Top Chef, that's usually a way to punch your ticket home.
But, okay, so Kevin was eliminated. Kevin,
yep.
For the sin of having too much cheese in the risotto. Hello, it's Wisconsin. He should have won.
It wasn't a sausage dish, though. I knew as soon as they were plating it up, he only put one little slice of sausage on his risotto.
Yep.
Had he put two or three, he probably would have been all right.
You take the sausage, the case. You spiral cut it, and you present it over the risotto. I can do that.
Put oh, look who joins show. In with 10 seconds left here. All right. We'll do this again next week.
He's warming up to us, Pat. He's warming up.
Thank no, you, this Luke. Is still a punishment. I feel like I did something wrong.
Thank you, Greg. Enjoy your day, everybody. We'll Thanks, see you everyone. Tomorrow.